Welcome to the White Hats and Lab Coats podcast, presented by the Biohacking Village. Each episode will explore DIY bio, citizen science, and medical device security with guests from the healthcare, cybersecurity research, and biohacking communities. Hosted by Nina Alley and Bo Woods.
Hey, Nina.
Hey.
How are you?
Superb. How are you?
Doing all right.
Good.
Hey, do you ever think about cows?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
You're now a meat eater again, right?
I am, yeah.
This is a topic especially close to your newfound love of beef.
Legitimately, I've always loved beef. I was a vegetarian vegan during my childhood, and then I did it again in my adulthood and went back home for a weekend and had a steak at a Brazilian restaurant, and it was like a meat jetpack. It was amazing.
A meat jetpack.
Love it. Yeah.
Well, if you've ever driven by or gone by kind of a modern farm,
we have a lot of those
cattle
in Brooklyn.
Farm. You probably do, yeah. There's just these immense areas of cattle. And unlike in the old days, farmers don't have the ability to pay attention to each individual cow. They don't know what's going on with them. And it's hard to kind of monitor the individual
herd
health as mm-hmm. well as the herd health in real time.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some research going on out there, some scientists trying to work on that problem so that we can have healthier herds.
And better meat.
Better meat.
Yeah.
Cut down on waste, hopefully be more efficient, because cow herds are not very efficient.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Ba-dum.
Yes. So we actually have Amanda Cyberlass.
Yeah.
That's been working on this, part of this problem. So,
yes, indeed.
I love you. So, give us a little bit of your background. How did you get into the citizen science-y side of the world?
I've always kind of had an interest in the tech and the cyborg and the futurism part of it. And I always wanted to see what the cool thing was coming out. Then around 2013, I ended up going to a transhumanism conference that was in San Francisco just for entertainment value. And while I was there, someone got up on stage who was a grinder, a human augmenter, and they said that they were tired of waiting. And that was what was sparking the movement, that they wanted to work with what was out there now to make good things, make the tech that we all wanted. And that just was a light bulb for me that, yeah, we need to stop waiting for people to hand us the things. They're not going to, or it will be, you know, commercial and corralled and gatewayed. And so instead, we'd rather go out, make our own, do the things. And from there, I discovered the DIY medicine people, the DIY bio folk, that whole biohacking sphere, the citizen science sphere.
So there's a couple of biomedical citizen science folks that are working off of this hashtag of we are not waiting. And,
oh,
right? And one of those is for diabetes. But for what you guys are working on current state, it's that herd mentality. And it's caring for the cows in a more holistic way. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. What we ended up doing was realizing that the technology that we were interested in for humans wasn't going to be adopted very quickly, but that there was a great opportunity mm-hmm. in the animal industry and animal agriculture, that the plants had had a lot of love for ag tech, but the animals hadn't. Mm-hmm. And there's a good gap there for being able to have biometrics on your animal, get alerts around distress or estrus or pregnancy, that literally knowing what's going on inside your animal, giving them a voice, so to speak, around what's happening with them. And that's something that the farmers could really use.
How's this being accepted by that community?
By and large, it has been. The farmers are fantastic because they will happily adopt technology as long as it works.
Yeah.
And it's showing the value. You can't, you know, it's a no bullshit kind of place. So they're all about getting good technology and that helps them. And that's why we work with the farmers to make sure that we're giving them the value. And we've been working with researchers to make sure that we're producing the results that are going to be helpful.
Is this tech that's being put in the cows based on tech that was worked on at Grindhouse Wetware?
There is a basis for it, yes. It was nothing that got overly developed.
Okay.
It was sort of one of the next projects was coming up, and that's when we kind of pivoted out from being, you know, more of a doc on a chip for people and into an embeddable vet in on a chip into cows and other livestock.
So for those who aren't familiar with Grindhouse Wetware or what went on there, can you just give maybe a little bit of background of that as to how it's relevant for this project?
Sure. Grindhouse Wetware is a biohacker collective that got formed a couple of years ago, and they have been producing biotech for humans, and specifically looking for implantables that can do basically cool things, interesting things. One of the early ones was the North Star that went under the skin and it lit up with LEDs. Mm-hmm. And now the advanced version is being developed that also incorporates gesture control. So you'll be able to, you know, make a hand gesture and have an app open on your phone kind of thing. So it's that iterative process to help give people cool new tech that we've been wanting.
Well, I can think of several apps that I would assign to a certain hand gesture that we can't name
we
on
all
the air.
Correct.
So have you guys looked at some of the work going on with like high performing athletes and is any of your work modeled after that?
It is not, but we have absolutely had some interest from that area. We do get the occasional personal trainer or people who are working with athletes going, so tell us about this for potentially for our athletes. One of the things I found fascinating working in the agriculture side is when we were just Grindhouse looking at these sorts of technologies, people were like, ew, no. Mm-hmm. But now that we've been putting it into cows and have been testing it, one of the next questions out of a lot of people's mouth is, so when are you putting it in people?
Yeah.
There's just this natural transition for it because it was okay with the animals, it must be okay for people. And so it shifted the tone of the conversation in a way that I hadn't anticipated, but I think is very interesting.
So I want to add that Tim Cannon was, I think, the keynote for the Biohacking Village, and that's recorded. It's on the DEF CON YouTube site, and you also gave a talk about commercialization at the 2019 Biohacking Village. How do you're both really smart in very different ways. How is that working together? Or how isn't it working together?
It works pretty well. Tim has the, shall we say, more vibrant personality. And I'm usually the rock solid practical person. So we by our powers combined get, oh, I see a little bit's going on for y'all as well. Mm-hmm. But it's good to have both styles out there because different pieces appeal to different people. And so it's good to be able to get the message across in different ways. And it's good to have people who tackle different parts. If we had extremely strong overlap, one of us would be redundant. Mm-hmm.
So how many cows do you have hooked up to these? Or, you know, what are the metrics that you're using to measure your success in this project?
Currently, most of our success metrics have been around having a couple of trials, and then we have a large partner that we're working with, and then we have a couple of smaller ones, and then some internal trials that we've done. Right now, we're kind of at the pre-launch phase, so we've just been strategically picking good partners and good trials to work with in order to confirm and validate where the tech is at and what changes are needed and get feedback from the farmers around what they really want and what they really need.
Okay. And how many cows are hooked up? How many farms are you working with?
We have one project where it's a multi-farm project, and then there's a couple of the others. I'd say in total, we've got around 80 right now.
80 farms or 80 cows?
80 cows. Okay. And then it's spread off across farms. We have some upcoming implantations going as well. But
So this is the now the Internet of Cows show, where it's all about the Internet of Cows.
So what are some of the challenges that you've come up to this point, and what do you need?
I would say the biggest challenge is just trying to develop technology that goes into a living creature. they're big water sacks, so getting the radio broadcasting out in a uniform way has been an interesting challenge. So just that piece has been something on the tech side that we've worked on. But overall, the thing that holds us back right now is money. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of a funding round. As soon as we get the funding in, we're able to proceed with the next revisions and do all the things that we need to do. It turns out that for a group of biohackers coming into the business world, it was a little harder for people to learn the business side than it was the tech and the science. Mm. Who knew?
Yeah.
And just to clarify, you're not doing this in the U.S., right? This is in another country.
It's both. Okay. We started in Australia,
okay.
And that's but we had been working with the University of Utah here in the U.S. for our first trials. We've had the company is a mixed half Australian, half U.S. folks, and we ended up having to create a U.S. office as well. And those are our first two markets. Australia is first, U.S. is second, and we have research and customers in both.
So being tech folks, citizen science folks, merging into business, what are the difficulties? What are you learning? That's actually the question.
It's a wild mix of lessons. Mm-hmm. I came from somewhat more of the operations and business side from my background, and working with people who were coming in from strictly the biohacker perspective, and then some a mix of professional as well, we learned to kind of bring together a little bit of the iterating fast and quickly and well. But then we also had to work through all of the pieces of having to actually do some of the documentation and what are visas and how does all of the business and legal and banking pieces work. So it was like getting those pieces that everyone wasn't necessarily as familiar with done was kind of the bigger challenge. I think we probably encountered the same thing that most startups do, where you're bringing in talent and then trying to grow and develop. And it's hard to work all those pieces at first. It's you have to have the right people in the right place to get the things done. And we succeeded at that, as proven by having our wonderful sensors and base stations. And we're soon to have our applicator ready to go. You have to get that sensor under the skin of the animal somehow. Mm-hmm. And that's what the applicator is for. Don't tell anyone except for everyone who listens to the podcast, but its code name was the Stabulator.
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 That sounds like a Futurama robot. I love it.
But it feels right.
It does. So can you give an example of something you learned, like you didn't expect?
It's been just such an organic process of learning. It's hard to pick out one particular thing. I think one thing that kind of stands out a little is the visa situation. For us as Americans going to Australia, we all had to end up getting visas, and then they had changed the visa that everyone used a couple of months into us starting the company, mm-hmm. resulting in a lot of the engineers had to go back to the US because we couldn't get that visa anymore. And at that point, it was going to be a very long process to try to get them the new one. And so we ended up having, you know, to create the new office essentially. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So just the fact that the unknown pieces are things that we could have never anticipated that the government would change the visa structure. Yeah. You have to be able to adapt and roll with things.
What about on the science side? Give me an example or give me a story about something you've learned from the science.
The coding is probably one of the more interesting ones to me, just because coding was one of the things that the community had been working on from the start. And we went in and have gone through several iterations to finally settle on the one that we're using. And seeing the process of figuring out what might work and how to apply it and how to test it has the entire thing has been very interesting. And I liked the fact that we're doing it, and then we have people in the community who are doing it as well, and you can see sort of parallels of development and the fact that we all go through the same process, whether we're a business or just in the community doing it ourselves.
Hmm. And that's the software code you're using?
No, coding with a T.
Oh, coding.
The stuff that covers. COA.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I talk about constantly is how biomedical engineering, citizen science, making a thing is so difficult because there's so many different parts to it. And people just think, well, I can just slam this in my body and it's going to be great. And there's yeah. coding, COAT, and there's mm-hmm. coding, COD, and there's mm-hmm. engineering behind it, and physics and chemistry and biology and all of the things. How has managing all of that been? I'm going to leave that as an open question.
Let's go with complex.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's been very interesting to try and pull all those pieces together. We did start sort of naively with the thought that, oh, all right, we're going to make a sensor, put it in a cow, it's yeah. going to be great.
Yeah.
But then it immediately blossomed into, well, we're going to create a sensor and something has to collect that data. So yeah. now we have to have a base station. Mm-hmm. And then we have to have a place to put all that data. And then we have to do something with that data. And then we have to have a way to display it to the farmer. And then we have to have a way to give the farmer the alerts they need. So it very quickly became an ecosystem, yeah. the full EmbediVet system, not just a sensor.
So I love that you and Tim are pretty open about all the complexities and the hardships and the achievements and all the other things that happen with the projects that are coming out. I think I call you at least once a month to either... Right? We have our bitch session. Okay. We have our advice session. Yeah. I don't think we've come to tears yet, but...
Not yet. Give me time.
but we have our conversations. So from our conversations, from things that you've learned, from things that you've taken away, mm-hmm. what is the best advice you have for somebody that's coming up in this field saying, I have a thing, I know it works, I just need this? What do you say?
I think one of the biggest things is to discern what your intentions are and collect the correct kind of talent for it. Mm-hmm. If you want to take this commercially, then you absolutely need to build up your business side. You need to make sure that you have someone who's going to understand compliance and regulation. Mm-hmm. You need to have the cool tech people in as well and the awesome science folk. You've got to get that core group. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it more on the community side, you kind of still need to do the same thing. But it's less about the business and it's more about maybe the grants and someone who can help you figure out how to get those and how to make sure that you're going to be able to budget your time and money accordingly in order to move things forward and then figure out how to get the tech that you're looking for out to the people that you want to connect it to. And so it's about what are you trying to get and then how do you get the right people and resources together.
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking to eventually transition this to human use?
Ooh, everyone loves to ask that. we would love to. Our first market is the animal livestock. It's the agriculture. It's making that the best product possible. We absolutely would love to see that move forward into the human markets eventually. The potential there is fantastic. I mean, at first blush, it just seems like it's essentially an internal Fitbit that never has to be charged and is completely waterproof and gives you more accurate readings for your own body. And I think people can get behind. Yeah, people can totally get behind that to some extent. We should know shockingly little about our own bodies and individually and how they operate in the day to day. And so having something that could give you that warning. But then as we advance the features, both animal side and then eventually people side, there's so much more that it could also be doing. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to seeing how that part progresses as well, and then what good things that could do if we do pivot into humans, and what are the top things that we could help people know about their bodies, help prevent diseases. I know with my Fitbit Garmin step counter kind of thing, it's good to have that sort of, oh yeah, no, my activity level is low. I should probably try to step it up, literally. If I had an implant that was telling me, hey, we can see that by your body composition's changing, that you're due for a heart attack in 10 years,
mm-hmm.
then maybe you'd be a little more motivated to go out and take another few steps and like see that go down to just 9 years or up to 12 or whatever. And so it's, I think having something that's sort of a reminder of that sort would be interesting. And then there's just other applications possible depending on what R&D will produce for us.
Somewhere between a full implant like you guys are doing with the cows and just a topical, like a Fitbit or something that I wear on my wrist. Continuous glucose monitors fit somewhere in between. There's an implanted characteristic of them and there's an external characteristic. So I wonder what other stuff you could do with that type of technology that's not just reading blood sugar levels.
Absolutely. That is one of the areas I'm interested in as well. I've been on the implantable glucose tracking train for a bit, and I'm glad to see that there's some progress being made out there with some different products. It always, for me, goes back to partially the over-commercialization aspect on those, because all of the companies that make the ones like that either attach and have the little bit that goes in, or there's a new one that's actually implantable, but it's only up for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so their model is to get more money out of us. Mm-hmm. So they're always trying to make it a consumable. They're not trying to make it a long-term thing. And that's sort of the problem with the commercial side of it, is that they're always trying to find a way to make lots of profit, especially for their investors or for for the company. And that's one of the aspects about community science that I find, citizen science especially, compelling, is that usually you're out to do these for your own personal projects. You want your friends, your family, yourself to have a continuous glucose monitor that'll last for a year, and then maybe have to swap out the implant, not 3 months. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or you want something that will last longer than 2 weeks. It should be able to go for 2 months. Why shouldn't it? And that personal interest helps drive it away from making it just a consumable. It gives more cash over all the time and into something that is actually more functional and better for everyone.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I think that that technology could extend outward. It would be interesting for people who want to be able to track more with hormones for whatever reasons. I think all of the people who are interested in the hormonal issues would definitely appreciate either something that helped with delivery or tracking of it. Mm,
yeah.
Fertility issues, et cetera.
Yeah, I could see a real benefit to any type of medication, right? I mean, think about like
blood thinners.
You know, as our parents get older, they often have to take medications, mm-hmm. or they're supposed to take medications, but we don't always mm-hmm. know that they took them. Mm-hmm. So, like, what could be done to instrument for, you know, have you taken all your medication today? How is it interacting? Is it the right doses? Does it fall off quicker than the doctor expected?
And that part especially, is it at the right dose? That's mm-hmm. the part that would be really interesting, because if you mm-hmm. have a personal implant in your body that's also like somewhat tracking your responses, you could start having a more calibrated dose.
Yes.
Medicine is calibrated to the adult male. And so adult females, older folk, younger folk, all of these people have different body mass composition on top of individual genetic responses.
Right.
So if you have something that can respond to that and give you the correct dose for you, that would be amazing.
Mm. Yeah.
And imagine all the clinical data that can come out of this for new trials. Yes.
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 Imagine hooking this up. Now, like, I'm just totally going crazy.
He's actually taking notes on where to send you.
I am. Yeah. I'm writing out business ideas as we speak.
Excellent.
So thinking about this, and, you know, the We Are Not Waiting, a lot of that was built around creating an open artificial pancreas.
Yes.
So imagine not just glucose, but all the drugs you would need. So, you know, like an infusion pump you might have at the hospital that might have three or four drugs in it. Maybe you could mm-hmm. get these little packages of infusible, they call it a bolus in insulin,
yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. But like you get three or four different boluses that is your monthly supply of whatever medication. And then it just trickles it out over time as you need it, constantly giving feedback and closing that loop. So, you know, instead of having to take a bunch of pills every single day, when your levels get to the right point, you get a dose and you get another dose when they're too low or whatever.
I see this especially helpful in chemotherapy because I worked in chemo for so long, and people sometimes the infusions, my mom had chemo and she had a 24-hour infusion. She had to take this bag home with her while it gave her the chemo inside for a week. So something like that would have been so much easier for her just to have it, be able to put the chemes inside. And think about time and expense. You can have this implant put in you once, you go back to the doctor, they implant whatever new chip has to happen, and you've just saved yourself a day of work or however much time it needs. The expense on it, I don't know if that would be as much. Just there's a lot of time and cost save and physical save. And I feel like a lot of the mental capacity on this would be alleviated, being that I know this thing is inside me, it's working, it's doing exactly what it needs to do. If something changes, the data is going to hit my doctor and say, we need to call this patient, have them come back in. I love this.
Yeah.
I'm also wondering about antibiotics. If we had a way to detect where your bacteria level was, and then it was microdosing or dosing for the antibiotics, and they could actually stop when it hit the right threshold rather than you keep going.
Right.
So then people could use less antibiotics. We'd be seeing a decrease potentially in the over medicating and the superbug buildup.
Right. Yeah. And if you start to see that the bacteria level is increasing rather than decreasing, you know that the treatment's not working. You got to try something different. Mm-hmm. So again, you avoid creating drug resistant, drug tolerant strains.
And just going back to cancer, if this is going to check your bloods constantly, you can see if there's abnormalities. Because again, maybe this weekend actually, my friend called me and he was hysterical because his dad has stage 4 prostatic cancer. Sorry, not prostatic, prostate cancer that metastasized to his spine. And he called me and said he has to do 44 chemo treatments because of this prostate cancer. And I said, no, that's not right. Something else is going on. But if there was a thing of your levels of these cells are a little abnormal, you may want to go check on this or that.
Check it early. Yeah.
Yeah, check it early. Exactly. Yeah. And imagine this for pancreatic cancer because it goes from stage 0 to 4 in like 20 minutes. Hmm. It's one of the most hostile cancers. We could bring all of the cancer levels down, and that would be amazing. We're setting you up for nothing but success.
Yes.
So what are you doing after this call? Business call?
All for it.
I'm just thinking of Star Trek and the tricorder and how primitive that now, after this conversation, how primitive the tricorder seems. Like, why do you have to do a point in time assessment of your physical condition? Why can't you just be streaming this at all times?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much akin to, why do we have one physical a year? You have one data point for the whole year.
Yeah.
And then I'll see you next year. How about you see us quarterly? Because people just let themselves go. For example, my dad does. He is a diabetic and he will stop eating the carbs maybe a week and a half before he knows he has to go get his bloods done. Mm-hmm. And it honestly, it does bring them down. But then he's right back to like having all the things. And he brings
that sounds very familiar. I have friends and relatives that do the same.
Right. And they've all come to know how to get around the system. But what if they were monitored? And instead of that situation of, well, now your blood sugar is 800 and you have to give yourself how many clicks? It just
not only that, the monitoring of it is so cumbersome for diabetics. Even it's helpful with the Libres and the Dexcoms where you put something on and then you can like hold it up or it'll push to your phone. Mm-hmm. That has helped immensely because it's not a finger prick that people hate and builds up scar tissue and you have to move around a lot. Having something that just is proactively pushing it out to you is an amazing thing that we should definitely be putting out there. It makes life easier for everyone. And especially what we were saying with the elderly, it's a easier, sorry, older folk.
The older generation.
It is, right. The older generation, having something that's easy to use that would let them know their numbers, when it's in your face, it is harder to ignore. When you have to physically go take it,
But if we're talking about the older generation, I think we're all in the same age range, but we're in that middle state where we have grandparents that may be alive, we have parents that are alive, and we have kids. and monitoring mm-hmm. all those people, but via conversation can be really difficult.
Yeah.
But if I could monitor my mom or my dad or my grandparents, mm-hmm. I don't have kids, and say, you know, it looks like you have a fever. Maybe you should stay home today and rest. Or your hydration Absolutely. Is low. Hydration mm-hmm. is such a big deal with the older generation because sometimes Absolutely. Their vagus nerve doesn't work, or they're just, you know, coffee is water. My grandmother used to do that all the time. Coffee is water. Like, no, it is not water, lady.
Yeah, it's Coke for my mom.
It sort of can, but water is a better option.
Right. The caffeine does not help, lady. Anyway. Right.
Nor the sugar.
right.
Nor the milk that you put into your coffee.
Maybe she takes
Coke.
It black. You don't know.
She did. No, actually, she didn't. There was so much sugar, and she was a diabetic. It was amazing. Just watching her do this is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But on top of this, just something else to think about, because I had been working on a project, and it was something that I had to take into consideration, was with the older generation, sometimes they're on warfarin, the blood thinners, and putting a device inside someone, it takes a week or two for them to be off of this medication so that you can put this in their body and then close them back up. Get them all settled into where they have to be and then normalize themselves. So also imagine how much data is going to be coming into physicians, clinicians, the hospitals, the EMRs, all of the data that's going to suddenly be inundating this field. And are they ready for that? Not even the doctors. Are we as humans ready for that?
Well, I would say yes for myself, but I can't speak for everyone else.
Right.
This has been a great conversation.
Yes.
I want to have you back once you've got more data, once you've got more info. Once we've started building out the human prototypes, I want to see that at the Biohacking Village.
I will be a human
software.
Prototype.
I will too.
Yeah, see?
This is cool.
We trust you.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the White Hats and Lab Coats podcast, presented by the Biohacking Village. Join the community conversation and expand your gray matter on Twitter at @DC_BHV and get transcripts, links, and show notes at whitehatslabcoats.org.